Mentored by some of the best minds in entrepreneurship in the world, then you're listening to the right podcast, Ditch Digger CEO. We're going to be interviewing CEOs and founders who will be telling their amazing rags-to-riches stories. These entrepreneurs who dominate the industries they serve will be sharing the secrets to their success. We'll be talking to millionaires and billionaires, many who started with nothing. You're going to be mentored with golden nuggets of shared experiences from my guests, whose time is worth thousands and even tens of thousands of dollars per hour. I started in the paving business right out of high school, and with no college education, mentorship has been my education of choice. I started over 25 companies in the last 20 years, have generated over $1.5 billion in revenues. My guarantee is this: if you listen to Ditch Digger CEO and you want to be more successful, you will become more successful. The secrets of my success and for many of the world's greatest business leaders will be revealed. Let Ditch Digger CEO mentor you.
Hey, we're excited. We got a great guest today. We got Mauro Camuzzi here, a great paving guy, type of people I respect, hardworking people that built something with hard work and sweat in industries that aren't so easy. You know, you got to get your hands dirty in this industry we're in. And so I love interviewing people that are in the business that I love, paving. So I'm a little partial to this industry, and I'm partial to people like Merle. So Merle, welcome to Ditch Digger CEO today.
Thank you. Thank you, Gary. Glad to be here, man.
Thanks for spending the time with us. We just want to go over your story, and we want to understand, you know, how you built this cool company, the Paving Lady. Everybody's going to want to know the Paving Lady. What does that mean, right? You can explain
well,
that.
There's a story behind it. There's definitely a story. We're
going to hear that story, and we got some awesome things to talk about with you, being a native of Venezuela and coming here in 1979 from Florida into Florida, making that your home, and I'll talk about all that. So let's start from the beginning. Let's start a little bit about, just talk about the name of the Paving Lady, where that came from. Then we're going to go back to, you know, how you got here to America and a little bit of that story. Okay.
Perfect. So yeah, the Paving Lady, that's a topic. Everybody always wants to know how I am the Paving Lady. The original Paving Lady was Janice Riley. She started a business in 1985. She built it into a very good, reputable company here in South Florida. And in 2007, 2008, I started my own seal coat company, maintenance, you know, business. And that was right at the downturn of the economy. So everybody thought I was really smart for doing a maintenance business at the downturn of the economy. I told everybody I was just lucky. You know, I just started it. You know, I'd gotten out of a couple other businesses and started it with a friend and decided, you know, my friend decided not to do it. So I started this seal coat business, learned how to do it on YouTube, went out and started spraying. And I was spraying a lot of buildings and a lot of car stops and a lot of sidewalks because I didn't know how to do it. Little by little, gained some confidence, built the business into a pretty good sized business down here. And I met Janice Riley in those first few years of my business. She decided to retire in 2016. I bought the company from her in 2016. We had 22 employees at the time. Right now, as of 2 days ago, we have 112 employees. So we've grown the business fairly fast in the industry that we're in, and especially in the market that we're in. Very, very competitive market. It's very competitive, let's put it that way. So that's how I became the Paving Lady. So, you know, it's an interesting story. People always ask me, Mar, were you ever going to change the name? And at first I thought about it, Gary, and I said, you know what? I went to a couple of trade shows or a couple of networking events. And people would look at my name tag and it says, Mauro Camuzzi, owner of the Paving Lady. And they said, how are you the owner of the Paving Lady? And it gave me 5 minutes to talk about myself. So I said, you know what? I'm not changing this name because it's a great way to talk about my favorite subject, which is me. So, you know.
I love it. I love it. And that makes so much sense, right? And a lot of times you think, you know, a name should tell the story. And that's one concept that people like. And, you know, with us, you know, Ravine Paving, you know, we've always just said what we do and a lot of things that we do. Doors and docks, everything's Ravine, mechanical, everything's Ravine. But you know what? I agree with you 100%. If you have something that's a conversation starter within the name and people question that, wait, Paving Lady, who owns that? Who's the gal that owns that, right?
Right.
I mean, now when they find out it's Morrow, right? I mean, now it's, well, wait, that's different, right? And so I think that registers in people's heads even better than the ease of, you know, oh, it's, you know, Morrow Paving, right? And,
right.
You know, that says, okay, this guy, Morrow owns it. So I like that. I think it's an awesome thing to keep because, you know, people, once they know the story, now they get that story embedded in their head.
Yeah.
And when they think of paving, they think of this cool story that you got.
Yeah.
I love it. It's
been a cool ride.
And so what was the name of the company when you started, the seal coating company?
So I started a company called 1-800-SEAL-COAT of South Florida. And we had bought the vanity number or rented a vanity number from US Pavement Services up in Boston. And,
yeah.
You know, for me, it was, you know what? It's like a 1-800-FLOWERS, 1-800-CONTACTS. I'm just going to call it 1-800-SEAL-COAT. You know, let people just remember the phone number. And then me, I'm the person that they're going to remember, right? They'll remember Morrow, but they'll remember the phone number, the name of the company all at the same time.
You know, funny story. I've got one of my best partners, teammates, is a guy that we should actually have on the show sometime. He's an entrepreneur also. He sold his company when he was like 36 or 7 years old and he wanted to just hang with his kids for a crucial part of his three kids' young lives. And he did for like 10 years. And he said, you know, he wanted to be an entrepreneur and wanted to get back in business. So let's say, probably must have been younger than this, probably 33 or 4, because at 42 or 3, he bought a seal coating company because he was mad because he got a bad seal coating job. And he was just mad about this job. He got on one of his properties. So I could do this thing. So sure enough, he bought this little company and he bought the 1-800 seal code number from his name?
Mike Musso.
And he had it in Rockford, Illinois, right? So it's kind of funny. Now, I ended up buying his company, not because his company was special, because he was very small, but this guy was selling Ravine Paving in Illinois better than my salespeople were selling, better than I was selling Ravine Paving, and he'd mark us up 20-30%, make more money than we make, right?
Right, right.
So I bought his little seal coating company so that I can bring him on board. He believed in his mind that he was only going to be there for a year or two until the non-compete ran out, we had like a little earn out until it ran out. And instead, he's been here now for about 15 years in my business. He is the best hunter I've ever seen in any industry. And so he became he's a partner in every business we have. He's the hunter. He's in charge of hunting for every company we have. But again, back to the story though, it's just kind of funny that same kind of thing, you know, you took that name and then bought into another business. He took that name. I bought into him. He's now a leader and a partner in our businesses. But, you know, if you can sell, in my opinion, something you're passionate about, you know, you can build anything, in my opinion, as long as you have some common sense and operational skills, right?
Yeah.
But you have an 800 seal code. You had to sell that. I mean, you know, you had to sell that. The name is a great name for people to be able to call on, but then you better deliver afterwards.
100%.
So then 1-800 seal code, did it kind of roll into the Paving Lady?
So no, I just basically what I did is I ended 1-800-SEAL-COAT, still kept it open. I still have that business open. I still have the vanity number. One, for one reason, I don't want anybody else to have it down here because I marketed it so well for a long time. So I still have that. And so all the business that we do now is through Janice, the Paving Lady. So, you know, 100%, you know, Paving Lady now, no 1-800-SEAL-COAT right now.
Awesome. Okay. So tell us, you know, how this, you know, the life in Venezuela was and why you came to America in 1979 and you know, there's what type of difference there was between those two countries and what you see today and the difference. And also just 15 minutes about that.
So very sentimental for me because my father, first my grandfather moved to Venezuela in 1944 with nothing, and through hard work, that's how all the immigrants that came into Venezuela, because the dictator back then, Pérez Jiménez, knew that Venezuelan people were not going to build that country. They weren't going to build that country. So he opened up the borders and said, hey, I'll protect your investment. Come on over here. I need hardworking people that are going to be able to bring this country to what he thought it could become. So he opened up the floodgates. A lot of people from Italy, a lot of people from Argentina, a lot of people from Portugal, Spain, Germany migrated to Venezuela. My grandfather was first. My father was in the 50s. My father moved there with a Vespa. That's all he had was a Vespa motorcycle, right? And he landed at the port there and they docked and he went to a place called Maracay, which is about an hour south of Caracas. And he was an electrician by trade. You know, he learned that in the Italian Navy. And when he got to Maracay, he started working. You know, that's what Italians did, you know, worked really hard. Little by little, he became a builder. Then he became a developer. My grandfather on my mom's side, he built 2 hotels and restaurants. So through a lot of hard work, they built my grandfather an empire when it came to the hotels and the restaurants. My father, if I showed you the city, I could show you that in, let's say, the downtown area, my father probably built half the buildings down there and developed more than half that city at the time. He was actually commissioned by the president back there, and Caldera was the president, to build, I think it was 1,000 homes. He built 1,000 homes for the residents of Maracay. And my father, you know, worked his whole life. And, you know, when I say a legacy, I mean real estate, hotel businesses that were flourishing. And, you know, it was amazing to see that as a child. My father was always in Venezuela. He brought us over here in 1979 because he wanted us to have the education in America. He wanted us to have that American dream. He knew what that was. Mm-hmm. So he made every sacrifice he had to make to get us here. We came here in 1979, me and my 2 brothers and my mom. My father was always present in my life. You know, I always heard his voice, even though he wasn't around. And fast forward that to, let's call it 98, I believe it was, when Hugo Chavez got put into power. And to watch that country slowly go from one of the most democratic and advanced countries in Venezuela, in Latin America, to what it became in 14 short years with that type of government in place, it was something that I think my father, he passed in 2016, but I think he's rolling in his grave because nobody ever thought that that would happen. And so, you know, the differences that I see and, you know, I see in this country now, and I've been watching it little by little, it's everything I saw in Venezuela, I see it happening here. You know, the wage equality, the healthcare system for free, the borders, open borders, everything that I see that happened in Venezuela, I see it happening here. And, you know, go to Miami and ask any Cuban immigrant and ask any Venezuelan immigrant that's here how they feel about what they see here. And they're going to tell you the same thing. They've seen it with their own eyes. And everybody would have the same comment. No way it could happen in my country. And, you know, I think the more we see that here and the more you hear that here, I think people, you know, play into this because, you know, they just go through life happy. And as long as I'm getting my paycheck, as long as I'm getting, you know, certain, entitlements, I'm good. And that's mm-hmm. the most dangerous thing that I've ever seen in the country, you know, because I saw it in Venezuela. You know, one of the things that really got me was when I saw that wage, the minimum wage fight, okay, the minimum wage fight to raise that minimum wage, everybody else was, up in arms about different things in these bills. That one was the one that scared me the most because in Venezuela, what I saw in my father's business is, you know, let's say the minimum wage, it was $12 and now it's 15. Well, anybody that was at 15 before now says, well, I'm not minimum wage anymore. Now I got to go to 18. So, and you saw that happening every single 6 months because the inflation in Venezuela was so bad that, you know, you couldn't afford the things that you thought you would be able to afford now because of inflation. Well, what ends up happening was, and the government down there is a little bit more in your face and they'll take things away from you, right? So what ended up happening was, is they kept raising prices. You know, people in the business said, well, it cost me this much to have a gallon of milk, produce a gallon of milk. Well, the government finally said, you know what? You got to sell it at this price control. Yeah, you got to sell it at this.
And then so, what do you hear from this goofy president we have in this administration now, right? That businesses are gouging. No, guess what? If you look at the average percentage of profit in any size, any group of businesses, they're similar or less than they were.
Well, so if you keep raising the, if you keep raising the cost of manufacture or to build anything, your price is going to go up. So what ended up happening, Gary, in Venezuela was, all right, well, if you're not going to sell it at this, then we're going to take your business from you. Yep. At first, they bought the businesses. After a while, they took the businesses. Mm-hmm. And you know what's crazy? I found out through a friend that all the businesses that went bankrupt that the government took over, because you have government running private business, doesn't work. Okay. So what ended up happening was, now the government's trying to sell the businesses back to investors that want to buy the businesses and run them privately. So it's come full circle. So now friends of the government are buying private businesses to run them themselves. It's
sure.
You know, I see a lot of similarities, and you know, I just watch from a from the background. My wife hears me all the time about it because she's gone through this whole thing with me. But that's what I see going on.
100%. No, I see it as well. I mean, we look at 1998, 2000. Venezuela was the second wealthiest country per capita in the world. The first wealthiest in South America, right?
Yeah.
Is that right? That's what I remember reading, right? And only those 14 short years, it went from being that to a third world country.
That's right.
And it's not getting any better, right?
Well, it's getting worse. It's a narco state now. It's a narco state. You know, mm-hmm. So the new government was, you know, under Maduro, was mortgaging the oil that's in the ground to China, saying, okay, give us a $4 billion loan. We'll give you this many barrels of oil coming out of the ground. Well, China cut them off. And, you know, Maduro said, well, why are you cutting me off? They said, well, it's not that we don't think you have the oil in the ground. We just don't think you can get it out of the ground because mm-hmm. of the investment that wasn't put back into the industry, because that's what government does. They did over there. They don't invest back into the industry. They sure. keep all the American companies and good companies out. And that's what you're stuck with.
Big government always smothers the golden goose, always, right? I mean, it's how it is. And again, I look at Illinois and Chicago, where I'm from, where property values, you know, used to be some of the best in the country, always consistently going up, never usually going down, even in bad economies, staying pretty stable. And since 2008, property values have sunk, not gained, even though they were, okay, 2008, property values went down like everywhere in the country, right? But no other place in the country has gone down, is lower than it was back then, right? So in other words, when it dropped, it got to a point where, let's say it's 50 on average, 40% less than normal. Today, it's less than that. Okay. Other parts of the world, every other part of the country where it went down, now it's above, way above that old 2008 high. And no matter where you're at, even dumbass states like California and New York, right, they're way above. Illinois, unfortunately, they've got, you know, people that are just killing the golden goose with the highest taxes in America now. And it just doesn't work, right? You have to create value, right? For you and I in our businesses, if we don't deliver a great product at a fair price, we're not going to be in business very long, right?
100%.
When it comes to taxation, it's the same thing. In Florida, our taxes aren't cheap. They're somewhere in the middle of the country when it comes to, you know, the level of taxation combined with if you add everything up. But the value Florida is delivering is excellent. Okay, so it's an excellent product at a fair price. Illinois is the highest tax state, or that in California, they're kind of neck and neck, one of the highest, if not the highest in the country now when you add everything up, and they're delivering the worst value. Okay. That doesn't work. And people that just do their own due diligence said, they say they got to get out of there. Right. Myself included. So unfortunately it's really not that difficult. It's common sense that we have to know in business that in politics, if you believe socialism is a good thing, communism is a good thing, you know, economically, the market you lead will not survive.
No, absolutely not. And you know, to me, everything, you know, from what I saw in Venezuela, it was a mask. You know, it was a mask. You know, the socialism was just, hey, we're gonna make everybody equal. We're gonna take away from the people that are working the hardest and give them to the people that don't have anything. That never works. It never works. I mean, you show me one place that's ever worked in the world. And you know, it's just, I saw it firsthand, and I saw it in a very short period of time. And, you know, and I'll give you a quick analogy. If you were, let's say, the son of a very wealthy businessman in Venezuela, and he sent you over here at the beginning of Chavez, right? At the beginning of Chavez era. And let's say he was so wealthy, he was sending you $1 million. Your dad was sending you $1 million a month as an allowance. That 14 years later was worth $100. That's the same amount that he would have to change a believer as to dollars was worth $100. So
think about that.
Think about that for a second. So anybody that, you know, like my mom who lived and off of the money that our hotel and other rentals would make, you know, if you change that into dollars today, it's nothing. It's absolutely nothing. You know, if I wanted to live in Venezuela, it's still a good living, but I don't want to live in Venezuela. You know, I know what that's about now.
So in the same respect, the devaluation of you know, real estate and businesses, anything in that market go to nothing and worse than nothing. The government takes it over, physically takes them over, buys them for nothing, or they just overtax them. So they're making way more money than the business owner can make. So either way, government eventually has to own everything and they still don't survive. They stink because nothing gets better. It all gets worse. So we're on the same page and we know that you know, that's something that we better be careful of. We better watch. And as business leaders, we better keep our eye on that and we better speak loudly and not quietly. Business leaders that are respected, not speaking up against this are one of the most dangerous parts of our society, dangerous people in our society, because just like in any communist environment, when things are going from free markets to communism, it's those leaders that didn't speak up that knew better. That, in my opinion, were the biggest culprits, and so we got a lot of those right now, and we need to get those our complacent friends off their butts, speaking up with us.
What is that? What's that old saying that all evil needs is for good people to stand by and do nothing? Right?
Exactly.
It's all it really needs. Yeah.
Okay, so we talk about business and the value you deliver. Let's talk about When you're in our industry, as you say, there's a lot of people do what we do, right? And so you know, we're always thinking, how do we differentiate? How do we bring a product to the market or give our customers something they can remember? So the next time they're looking at paving a parking lot, they're saying, man, I want the paving lady. This Mauro's the best and his team's the best. I want them. Tell us the things you do to make a difference. So your customers are thinking of you first.
Well, you know, I think it comes a lot. A lot of it comes before we ever get the job. I do a lot of teaching. I teach for, I'm certified by the state of Florida to teach continuing education for CAM classes for anybody who has a community association license. So I do a lot of teaching. And I think a lot of people, when they see me, they see me as the expert in my industry. So one of the things that I think we do very well is educate our customers before. Also, I think a lot of the communication that we have, because in our industry, Gary, as you know it as well as I do, if you communicate and you just do what you say you're going to do and don't overpromise and tell the customer what they need to hear, not what they want to hear. Don't sell a seal coat when they need a mill and pave. Don't overpromise your product, what it's going to do to that parking lot when you know it's not going to happen, just to get the sale. You know, I'll sell myself out of work a lot. And my salespeople, when I do presentations for board members, you know, my salespeople sometimes quiver in the corner because I sit there and tell them, I said, look, you're not buying a marble countertop. You're buying asphalt pavement. You're going to see rocks. You're going to see unevenness. You're going to see different textures in different places. Mm-hmm. You know, you're going to see different things. I tell people sometimes, you know, I remember I had somebody say to me one time, Gary, was that we were looking under a porte-cochere of a clubhouse and the asphalt was a little rougher there because it was done by hand in this one corner. And he says, well, you know, what's that? Why is it like that? And I said, this is asphalt. He goes, well, this is a $7 million clubhouse. I said, you think the asphalt knows that? The asphalt doesn't know that. Asphalt's asphalt. It's going to behave like asphalt. And I think you need to tell your customers that. Tell them the good, the bad, and actually tell them what you're doing for them. So I do believe the education part of it is big. I think the communication that we have throughout the project is very big. And also, just a lot of the testimonials that we have, a lot of our stuff is word of mouth. So even to today. So that's
awesome.
Yeah, I don't think we have a secret sauce, Gary. I don't think there's anything out there that says, you know, trade secret. I buy material where everybody else buys it. I price my stuff the way everybody else prices it. You know, if I want to give something away today, I do. If I don't, I don't. But it's really just about, I think, the leadership, myself, and how that trickles down to my salespeople and into my field.
now you're growing like you're growing, you got to inspire leadership. You can't do it all, right? So tell me about how you inspire leadership and within this team you have and the trusted leaders you have that you're growing in the organization.
So two ways for me is I lead by example. I don't ever ask an employee to do something that I wouldn't do. You know, I'm probably one of the first people here in the office. And for the longest time, I was here before 5 a.m. every single day, saw every employee leave and stay pretty much the whole day, 6, 7 o'clock. The other thing is that, remember, I started seal coating. I seal coated myself. I striped myself. I patched myself. I did concrete myself. So being able to communicate that to our field guys, there's a certain level of respect there because they know I've done the work. And also, when I first started 1-800 Seal Coat, I did all the billings. I did all the permits. There isn't any part of my business that I didn't do physically myself. So there wasn't anything that I could tell somebody, well, just file for this permit. Go figure it out. I could tell you how to do it. I can show you how to do it. Things have changed, right, over the years. But there really wasn't anything that I didn't do prior to me growing the business. So because I was a one-man shop for a while, me and my wife, we did it all. So there really isn't anything that I'm telling somebody to do that I haven't done.
Awesome. The same thing. It's a lot easier if you've done the work you're asking others to do, right?
Right.
And I'm blessed that I've come from the same environment, started seal coating, patching, and do what we do today all over, right? But Dana White, I saw a podcast with Dana White on it the other day, and he basically, funny, he called out, paving companies and, people do paving. He goes, I did paving for one summer. He goes, I fought, I trained to fight all this. There's nothing tougher, nothing harder than pouring concrete and paving asphalt. He goes, yeah. Those are the people that work hard. This is where hard work begins, right? And anyway, so it's funny because Dana White, the badass that he is, right? Who's done a lot of training and been around an industry he's been blessed to be able to profit from. But when he thinks about hard work and building stuff, he says, I tell you, when I think of hard work, I think of paving companies, right? Paving yeah. guys and guys are doing that paving. And so it was kind of fun. But when you've done that, as you have, and I've been blessed to do it and loved it, like probably you had too. When you've done it, now it's really easy to talk about it. It's really easy to respect the time those your teammates are spending out there busting their butt in hot weather, in rain, yep. and all the other environments that they're in, right? While we're doing the stuff that we do that we do as leaders, they're out there busting their butt. You respect them way more,
yes.
when you've actually done it yourself, right?
Oh, 100%.
That's awesome.
So my first employee ever, his name is Wilson. He still works for me here. My first employee ever, he works for me at the Paving Lady now. And every now and then somebody will say something in the field when we're out there and he'll shut him up. He'll say, hey, this guy right here used to do all of this. Wilson and I spent many a night, him with pushing white paint, me pushing yellow paint, striping shopping centers, right?
Yeah.
So he'll tell these guys, look, he's done it all. The only thing I really didn't do was sit on a paving machine because we didn't do paving at 1-800 Seal Coat. So, but yeah. I did do everything else.
Yeah, no, you did the tough stuff. That's awesome. All right. So when you think about, as you lead in the future and from the past to the future, what of your, any written core values, stated core values that you guys use, is there a general culture that you've created with a few different values? Tell me about that.
So it's funny you say this. I right in front of me right now. See all this? Those are our core fundamentals that we're writing right now, redoing. And I'll tell you why I'm doing this, Gary.
You call them core fundamentals?
That's right. So a little thing about me, weird or not, somebody says to me, what are your core values? And I had a really hard time with this. And I'll tell you why. So the word equality, the word reliable, the word, on time, whatever you want to use, right? Punctual, whatever you want to use. I have a hard time putting that as a core value because that's something I should do. It shouldn't be, I know you have to list it, but when you see a truck driving down the street and it says quality construction, well, you're supposed to do quality construction. I don't think you should put that. It's kind of like somebody saying, I'm a good father. Well, what do you want, a cookie? You're supposed to be a good father. So for me, the hard thing was putting something out there that I think we should do on a daily basis, whether it's in my business, whether it's personally, whether it's at home, whether it's with my, you know what I'm saying? I had a really hard time with this, but let me get back to my point about this. Pavex, that new, the new pavement expo, Pavex, asked me to go out and teach a class. And they asked me to put together a class. And I decided, look, when I was in 2007, sitting there listening to guys like Brad Humphrey and those guys talk to me about paving, what did I want to hear? What should I have heard in those classes? So I decided to teach a class called Full Contact Business Management. Nothing sexy, all the boring stuff. Core values, vision, setting goals, hiring the right people, process, you know, all of this stuff. And as I was putting together that class, Gary, I looked at my wife and I said, I don't know if I can teach this. And she said, why? You know all this, Mauro. Why? I said, because I'm not doing it in my own freaking company. And she says, what do you mean? I said, I'm going to sit in front of these people and I'm going to be a hypocrite. And I'm going to tell these guys that you should be doing this and this and this in your business. So right then in that moment in time, I decided we're going to turn my company inside out and we are redoing all our processes, all our SOPs, all our core values, rewriting everything to be able to put that culture back in place that we had when we had 22 employees. Now that we have 112, it becomes a little bit harder. But I needed to do that first. So, you know, it's almost like a culture rewrite for me at this moment in time when we're right in the middle of it. I actually hired an outside consultant to come in and help rewriting our, you know, SOPs and everything, because I believe when employees know what's expected of them, I believe if employees know exactly how they're supposed to do things, I believe if they know what's account, how they're being held accountable, that is a big part of the culture. Huge part.
So no doubt. So I mean, if you can exude these things as you do, right? And when you're smaller, you get away with building that business on that on the culture that you display, right? And you talk about and you exude every day. But as you get larger and you need to inspire other people to help you build your business further, then it makes then it makes perfect sense in my opinion. We've had it in writing for probably since we're maybe a $6 or $7 million company. But we probably didn't really get to where we were living it, living the core values and living the culture that we wanted, that we expected, you know, probably until we were probably a $30-40 million company, right? And so nowadays, we hire by our values. They're everywhere, and we talk about them all the time. You know, we're calling out, you know, positive, you know, people that exude our values in a positive way on a daily basis, right? We're firing, when we fire people, we don't like to fire ever, right? But it happens when we do. It's usually because we've called them out to that they're breaching a core value or two. Right. And when they can't come around and live within that core value that means so much, you know, we choose to exit that partnership.
Yeah.
And so I believe it's very, very important. As you're small, you got to exude it. You got to exude those values no matter what. They don't even have to be stated if you're everywhere, right? Or if you have a few people that are everywhere that exude those. But when you grow, boy, it's tough, right? Our culture, I don't think, has been better ever than what I see today. And we've got, 750 teammates or something like that. And we believe that it's stronger than it's ever been before. So that's really cool. And it's because my team is really doing a great job maintaining these values. I think that what you've done is you've exuded the core values, and up to, 10, 20, 30 people on your team, you can do that. When you get to where you're at today, you're, 100 plus employees. Now, boy, you better be all over inspiring your leaders, right?
Yeah.
To understand why you believe in each core value. What are some of the core values you're looking at? You're thinking that you guys are, considering. We go through this practice also every about 3-4 years. And we might tweak something, add, take one away. We don't usually want more than five, and I'd like to have four, but we're at five currently. And we kind of, they've stayed pretty similar for a long time, but we tweak things every 3-4 years so that our team can actually have some buy-in on potential changes, right?
Right, right. So, I mean, there's a couple of them. One of them for me is accountability. We hold ourselves accountable. So that's something about that I believe every person should hold themselves accountable. That's the type of person that I'm working for me. you know, chasing excellence. The reason I say chasing excellence, because you never get there. You're never going to be there. You know, there is no such thing as perfection, but if we can chase excellence, I think that's huge. I came up with one, which was D cubed. I like the D cubed. So desire, discipline, and deserve. So you have to have the desire to want to do your job better than anybody else. You have to have the discipline to be able to do that. And then you have to believe that you deserve everything that comes from doing all those things. Mm-hmm. I think that's very important because a lot of people will work, will do, but if in their mind they don't deserve what they think they should be getting, they're never going to get it.
They'll never get there.
So, you know, these are some of the things we're still working on them. I want to be a steward of my industry. You know, I want to leave my industry better than when I left it, you know, than when I found it. You know, I have two boys. I don't know if they're going to come into this business or not, but I want this industry to be better, not only for them, but for every other kid or somebody out there who's picking up a seal coat brush, you know, in the summertime to make some extra money out of the back of a pickup truck. I want this industry to be able to provide for them if you want to chase that dream, right? Mm-hmm. You know, the other one, only one first impression. That's it. We only get one, you know, and that starts from the moment a lead comes in here and how quickly my salespeople call these people, our clients, right? And then when you show up, how do you look? How do you present yourself? How do you talk? You know, these are all things that to me are going to be big in, like you said, hiring, maintaining our employees, showing them a way how to be and how to live our life. And you know what? If we have to say goodbye to a teammate, it's probably because they're not following these values.
Yeah, and it's probably better for them as well, right? They can go find something in a culture they want to be in, right? So
it's 100%.
Hopefully it becomes a win-win, but it can't be a lose-lose.
So I also heard, I forget who wrote this quote, and I said it in my class, and I love this quote, Gary. To me, it's, you know, it's huge. I talk to my kids about this all the time. And the quote is, the magic you're looking for is in the work that you're avoiding. So if you think about that for a second. The magic you're looking for is in the work that you're avoiding. A lot of people want something. A lot of people see it and they want it, but they won't do what it takes to get there. So if you put in the work, you can get whatever you want.
True. I like that. And if you look at that, very often in our businesses, there's work that we're not, you know, we don't want to go the extra mile for whatever reason, whether it's paperwork you have to do, or it's compliance issues you got to jump through, or it's high quality standards, right? But if you go after that work that you don't want to do, it's probably a niche market that other people, nobody wants to do, right?
Right.
And then the niche markets are where the best profitability lies.
100%.
So on a business basis, that works too, right?
Yeah.
One thing we get some great people on our podcast, a lady last week in your neck of the woods, actually. She said, yellow lights never turn green. Okay, well, and that means so much. What you said earlier, when you're basically, chasing excellence, right? You're never going to be perfect, right? But guess what? You got to get started. And so, you know, oftentimes when we're building things and we're trying something new, you're very, very often your teammates and your great teammates they're very smart. Don't want to get anything going. They don't want to start it. We're not ready yet. It's not perfect yet. It's not great yet, right? And so I've learned to say, no. We're going to tell our customers exactly where we're at. We're going to get it out there. It's going to be good, better than what we think they're getting. And eventually it will be great. We'll be perfect, never perfect. We're always going to be improving it. That's but right. We're going to be good now, and we're going to get on the market being good. And so I think, you know, kind of, you know, chasing excellence, as you said, is something that kind of says that too, right? Let's just work hard to do it the best we can.
Right.
Let's be transparent with our customers and ourselves, right? And let's just get going. And if you do that, and we do that over and over again, started two more new companies this year. We have 15 companies, I guess, now. And we're going to continue to grow businesses when we think we can serve our customers with something else that can differentiate, you know, we can deliver a better product, hopefully differentiate to that customer. So anyway, So it's like I said, that stuck in my head. I'm sure Chris too, from the last call, but you're chasing excellence is kind of very similar to that, right?
Well, the other one is perfection is the killer of progress. You know, you wait for perfection, you're never going to proceed. You're never going to start. You're never going to do it because you're always chasing it. There is no better time. When I hear when this, then this, when somebody says, well, when I get that job, I'll be happy. Or when I get that raise, I'll be able to do with it. When I, no. It's now. It's, there is no when. It's now. There is no exactly. When this, then this, you know?
Absolutely. And you know, when you talk about, you know, being honest with your customers and leading them with, you know, with, you know, basically, you know, clear expectations of what to expect, right? That's what we all need to do in our businesses if we want to be great, you know, great partners to our customers and our teammates too, right? But we've got that this product that I'll tell any paving company about that's going to be a product that paving companies across the country are going to partner with. Right now, you know, Rabine has taken advantage of it, but nowadays they're a separate entity, so it can't. So a company called Site Technology is a company that's our fastest growing company in the Rabine Group. But basically, we started it within the Rabine Group, basically to we were basically giving away high quality, world class engineering to the biggest property owners that we did work for, and it was, you know, the big retailers, distribution center owners nationally. So we basically, you know, had some great civil engineers on board, and we basically helped them understand what, you know, what to specify and what condition their pavement was in on big sites. Well, that was for about 15 years we did this. It was called Rabine Pavement Management. And eventually my son came on board to lead that, our national business. As a dad, customers are loving this, but it's costing us a lot of money. We're giving away all this engineering. And he goes, you know, we can use drones and we can stop flying engineers all over the country, saving us a ton of money. And then if we can save their engineering time by adding artificial intelligence and, you know, training artificial intelligence on the engineering principles we know, we can save a lot of engineering time too. So that was an idea he had 7 years ago within our national business. And today that's a business all by itself. That business called Site Technology is going to be a $1 billion company. We think in 3 or 4 years. Wow. It's on its way. It's well on its way. Anyway, that company now manages over 5 billion square feet of pavements nationally. When we started that program, when we started this, when we were doing boots on the ground, we were managing about 50 million square feet of pavements. And we thought that was pretty good, right? Because those customers were using us a lot. Now we're doing 5 billion square feet on our way to somewhere between 8 and 9 billion square feet this year, we think. But anyway, bottom line is, that now is a separate entity with separate partners involved in that aren't my paving businesses. So That's basically where we shut off basically the information going to the paving businesses as tough as it is to do. And until we're ready with a product where I can say, I can go to you and any respected paving company in any major market and say, if you're interested, yeah, I've got a platform that will give you all the information and data that you can't find otherwise. Currently 5 billion square feet of data from the biggest buyers of pavements in the world. Right. So, either way, this is growing fast, and it's going to be a product where if you have this, if you have access to it, you're not only going to know what all the biggest owners are going to do in your marketplace and as far as their budgets, you're also going to understand their specifications, and you're going to understand that the technology that they think is the best technology to use in the jobs, the right pavers, right compaction equipment, so on. But then you're also going to be part of a warranty program that's bulletproof. So it's a warranty where the contractors that work within it are going to warranty it, but when they warranty it for long, like, you know, 2 years, 5 years, 10 years, instead of a 1 year warranty, right, the expectation is going to be so clear of the aging process. Asphalt pavement ages, man. And, you know, 10, 12 years later, 50, you're going to need to overlay it. Right.
Right.
And every 4 or 5 years in markets like Southeast Florida, you're going to have to, you know, take care of it, crack seal, whatever. Right. Yeah. And so it's going to be an education tool like we've never seen before, so that the expectation is the clearest it's ever been before, right? And yeah. So we're going to be on the market in front of contractors shortly, and it's going to be a lot of fun. But right awesome. Now it's growing fast in the property management space, and then eventually it's going to be, you know, any paving, every you know, market's going to have a few paving companies that are going to be the master licensees for it, and with that, you know, we're confident way more opportunity, right? So
awesome.
We'll tell you when we get there, but your concept of clear expectation, right? You sell a clear expectation of what it's supposed to look like. It's asphalt, right? It's concrete. Here's what it does. It cracks, right? It's going to age, right? But again, when you educate well, the customer knows that, hey, an asphalt pavement, the expectation is in 10 years, it's gonna look like this, like, you know, 10-year-old pavement. And, you know, 50-60% of its life expectancy is gonna be gone. Yeah. If it's a high quality concrete pavement, 10 years goes by, we're gonna have like no maintenance on it. Not gonna have a lot to do, right?
We had a customer just now that we paved their neighborhood. It was a big HOA. It's a $2.5 million contract for us. It's 14 different HOAs inside of HOA. And one of the residents came out, and this is exactly why I said about expectations, because they don't really know. And it's not really their fault. They're just not educated, right?
Yeah.
You know, a woman came out of her house. She said, well, the last time this got resurfaced, it looked so much better. Well, they never resurfaced it. It was only seal coat. That's why they thought it looked better. Because when you seal coat, look, it's black. Everything looks kind of nice. You know, when you pave, it's not like that. You know, you see it in 2 weeks, it's a different color. So they were thinking that it was the same scope that they just did a few years back is what we were doing now, because the master HOA did not communicate it very well to them. So
sure,
that's what we're dealing with when you're dealing with people that you can't have that conversation with, because you can't talk to 1,500 residents. So exactly. You know, that's
clear, you know. Expectations are so important. And that's, so this, when you have a tool that gives them that, right, it's easy, because the tool tells them what a brand new pavement, a 100, you know, PCI looks like, and paving condition index at 100, it looks like this, right? It's brand new. Still going to be issue. You know, it's still going to look a little rough in areas or whatever. But this is what it's going to look like. And in year five, if it's at a 65 or 70, because it was a thin overlay, you know, that's what you expect. And there's what that looks like, right? So again, I think the expectation is the most important thing. And you mentioned early on, that's how you think. I like that. When you think about growth in the business, you know, are you going to grow in marketplace, you know, same marketplace? You're looking to grow across the state, across the country. What are your expectations?
So we're growing in the same market, but we are looking to grow a different geography from a different location where we are. Everything is moving to the north of us. You know, everything's moving from, you know, we're in Boynton Beach. You know, Port St. Lucie has had a huge, huge, huge growth last couple of years. I mean, so everything seems to be moving up that way. I see East Orlando growing, you know, out towards the coast. So I think it's going to happen, you know, in the next few years. You're going to see that growth from Port St. Lucie all the way up to Sebastian, Melbourne, and Orlando East to that. So, you know, we're exploring those options as well.
Yeah, I mean, it's amazing, the growth in Florida. It's like another country, right? Texas and Florida growth. We're in Texas also, and Texas and Florida growth is incredible. People go to the areas they're treating them best, right? So, Chris, what do you got to add, buddy? What do you got? Questions and stuff? Tell me about what you're thinking here.
Yeah. Mauro, this is awesome, man. Really, really inspiring. You know, the reminders of, you know, keeping this great country that we have are so powerful and important. So thank you for sharing those with us. We had one other guest who was from Venezuela as well, and it just brought back all those memories. I was like, oh my gosh, like, yeah, we really need to take these threats serious. And I loved the quote, you know, man, we're just nailing these quotes. Like, we had the yellow lights don't turn green last week, and the magic you're looking for is in the work you are avoiding. That's amazing. Like, I thought we'd heard everything, but that's a really powerful perspective shift and motivator, and it'll help you put everything in order. If I may be so bold, and Gary, I'd like to throw this question to you as well. You know, you're both incredibly successful business owners. Can you talk about the work you were avoiding that helped you take your businesses to the next level that once you started doing it?
Wow, that's a great question. For me, you know, the work that I had to put in to grow the business, I think I was always avoiding it because of fear. There was a certain level of fear because of how many people, you know, that I provide for, and for how many people that really I'm responsible for. I look at every one of my teammates, I'm responsible for them. So I was always afraid to make the move to expand or get bigger, because I didn't want to fail. let's put it that way. I felt that if I failed, I affected so many other people with me. One day I just, you know, put it up to God and I said, hey, you know, give me a sign, show me. And sure enough, we had some great people come into the business that allowed me to grow. So I think the work that I was avoiding was anything that had to do with growth and, you know, and getting the first paving crew, the second paving crew, the third, and now we're up to the fourth one now. So that work that I was, you know, kind of avoiding because I was not 100% sure of myself. So there was a lot of growth that I had to go through first. I think that was the biggest thing for me. The other part of it probably was, like Gary said, you know, there's a lot of things that, you know, paperwork, things that we don't want to do. And I found myself that if I was trying to avoid something, it's probably what I needed to work on the most, right? And if it was the accounting side of it, the book side of it, the things that were, I wasn't really, I'd do everything else. I'd clean my desk. I'd go outside and look at the equipment. I'd sweep the yard before I did the things that I knew I needed to do. But, you know, I avoided them because I didn't know them. And it's, you know, those things that I avoided the most are probably the things I need to be focusing on the most anyways. So I think those are the things for me.
Yeah, no doubt. And very similar stuff, right? For me, it was the accounting work that I was supposed to be doing quarterly that I was trying to do myself. There's no way. I like numbers a lot. So I said, I'm so good with numbers. I can do all my own accounting, right? Just turn everything in at the end of the year. I'm fine. Well, it worked when I was a few hundred thousand revenues and maybe a couple million. But it wasn't working so well as we got bigger. And so I ended up hiring somebody that was super strong on the accounting side. And that was great. But I never really spent as much time on the accounting side, except not, you know, now I do. I look at a lot of stuff. But back then, it was a pain. I couldn't stand doing accounting work. It was a waste of time for me because I wasn't getting more work. I wasn't selling like I like to do. I wasn't producing like I like to do. And then on the business side, when it comes to, you know, stuff that I stayed away from concrete work because I was kind of afraid of it. I was like, my paving guys, asphalt paving guys, always talk negatively about concrete. And, you know, I just hire somebody else to do that. It's easy to find subcontractors. So it took me 20 years before I started doing concrete sidewalks and flat work. And, you know, 25 years in, we're doing high production concrete paving. And today it's, you know, 40% of the parking lots we pave are concrete, right? So again, it was something I wasn't looking forward to, but once we learned more about it and understood the industry, you know, we're one of the leaders in concrete pavements today. So kind of same thing, right? It was something that not just I was avoiding, right? Asphalt paving companies across the country, still not many do high quality, high production concrete paving because it takes a lot to learn. And if you're an asphalt paving person, you've been kind of taught and it's been ingrained to you that concrete's kind of the enemy, you know, not concrete's, and, you know, it cracks and you can't patch it. And concrete is, it's rigid pavement. It's not flexible pavement. There's so many, you know, things you can say, but if you can do both, you can give the customer the choice, right? And educate the customer on expectations of either or, right?
Yeah.
So
100%.
Yeah. So that's a good question, Chris.
Oh, thanks.
What else do you get? What else do you get out of this, Christopher? Anything else?
Yeah. So 2016, that was not that long ago. I have very clear memories from that 8 or 9 years ago.
Yeah.
You, Morto, you had 22 employees when you purchased Paving Lady. Yeah. And now today you have 112. What shifted the scales to make that possible, to, you know, 5-6x, nearly 6x your employee count in 8 or 9 short years?
So, you know, I think, you know, I got to give credit where credit is due. And Janice, when she ran this company, you know, I tell a lot of people, it was kind of like I came in and it was like a horse that was being held back. And I think she was very comfortable, where she was, the amount of volume that she did. And she was very linear in her thinking and the type of business that she wanted. She wasn't very, let's call it, diversified. All I did was come in here and diversify the company a little bit. And we just took the values of the company that we had and the reputation of the company. So that was a very big boost for me. Number one, the reputation already. But then we just started offering the type of service. And, you know, I got myself out there a lot with my business development girl, Dawn Miller, who's been a blessing. And she really got me out in front of a lot of people. And what happened was, it's just on its own. You know, once we started doing work for municipalities, for contractors, for different type of silos, you know, instead of just the HOAs and condos, that just, the growth just happened. You know, I have to give it up to my team. I had a lot of great people. I still have a lot of great people that I call them, you know, my teammates, like you said, or my coworkers, because we all work very hard. So I think having those right people and being able to just kind of let go of the horse and let it run, it kind of all worked together, you know. Plus, look, we've had a great economy down here. You know, 16, you know, we saw some growth into 17, then we really took off after 18. And we've had, you know, great years. So COVID years for us were growth years.
Yeah. Awesome. Yeah. So my key takeaways here, evil can only succeed while good people do nothing. Awesome. Can't hear that one enough. Yeah. Always lead by example, be the first one there, the first one to leave, and success you are likely to find. Have your core values written from the start, or at least as early as possible. And, you know, the crown jewel of these, the magic you're looking for is behind the work you are avoiding. Niche market is where the best profits lie. Perfection is the killer of progress. Maura, where can our audience find out more about you?
Well, they can visit my website. It's www.pavinglady.com. They can find me on Facebook personally, Maura Camuzzi. They can find the Paving Lady on Facebook, the Paving Lady on Instagram, the Paving Lady on LinkedIn. And they can reach out at any one of those pages.
Awesome. And, you know, then the thing that you started with too, that I like, we mentioned a couple of times, is just, you know, just the integrity, you know, transparency, integrity in your business to sell the right expectation, clear expectation, right? And I think that a lot of people don't think they can do that. So I like that as a big takeaway as well. I think it seems simple, but it's so unused overall in our industry, in any industry, I think. So, you know, give them a clear expectation of what to expect. And that's what we're trying to do with technology today that's going to help us all do that even better. So yeah, that's a great one. Well, thanks a lot, man. I really appreciate your time today. Maura, you're awesome. And I'm going to travel over there a couple hours away from me, I guess, probably 2.5 hours away.
Yeah, it's not even. On a good day, 2 hours.
I'm gonna come on by there. We're gonna hang out sometime. You're a cool guy, and you know, your story is amazing. And you know, it's paving guys gotta stick. It's guys and paving ladies gotta stick together, right?
That's right.
and also, you. I don't know if you're doing anything for a national business or anything else, but we should talk that way too.
100%.
Because Rabine Paving America does a lot of stuff all over the country in your market as well as the one I'm in here. So anything we can do there too in the future, awesome. Love to work in.
Look forward to it, guys. Look forward to it.
Awesome. Well, thanks a lot, man. Really appreciate your time today. And thanks for being on Ditch Digger CEO. And thanks everybody for listening to this great story that you're going to learn a lot from. There are a lot of people going to learn a lot from it. So
thanks, guys. Appreciate it.
Have a spectacular day, buddy.
You do. You too, guys. Thanks. Take care.
Bye. All right. Thanks, Maura.
If you enjoy this show, please share with anyone else you think will find value here. And please go to our website, ditchdiggerceo.com, for show notes, links, video clips, and more nuggets of entrepreneurial wisdom. Don't forget to follow me on social media at ditchdiggerceo. Paper routes, mowing lawns, cans.